Welcome, everybody, to the Stoned On Sports Podcast. My name is Matt. Really happy to be here with you on this Thursday evening. We've got quite a bit on the docket for you tonight. We are finishing up prospect week. Of course, we're not going to forget about the divisional round of the playoffs in the NFL this weekend. I know both Kyle and I are really looking forward to that. And of course, we're going to be taking you to school. That's right. We've got another installment of Fantasy Baseball 101. And today with that, we're going to focus on monitoring the minor leagues and why it's important. Kyle, I know we've been digging through the prospects this week, and a lot of sites don't have their 2024 lists out, but we've still been able to unearth a few gems here this week.
Heck yeah, man. I'm glad to be here. Talk some prospects, talk some football again, talk some fantasy baseball 101. I see Dubo's in the chat as always. Thanks for
Dubo.
Thanks for joining, brother. Always glad to have your support and hang out here with us and interact and talk with us and bull crap with us. Ooh, saved it. I almost said bull something.
Proud of you.
Yeah. But no, yeah, finishing up the prospects. We talked 10 the other night on Tuesday. We're going to talk another 10 tonight, mix of some pitchers and some hitters and some hopefuls for, you know, the beginning of the season. Looks like a lot of them are midseason hopefuls. The first one I will start with is, hold on, Coby Mayo. That's a great name, Coby Mayo. Third base.
Wonder if he's a Miracle Whip guy.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Interesting. I don't know. Played last year in double and triple A. Hit 290 with 504 at bats. Had a 974 OPS though. Only walked 93 times, which is excellent. Did strike out 148 times. He's a big guy, 6'5". Finally developed his swing. I think that he won't be a batting average standout, but he should walk enough to make up for it. He could peak, you know, in his career somewhere along the lines of a Pete Alonso, a Max Muncy, maybe I have him projected. Not this year, obviously, but I think you might see him later this year, though.
Yeah, there's a good shot. And when he originally made the jump up to double A, he was really struggling with his plate discipline. He had a 34.5% strikeout rate in 2022, but he settled in nicely last year at double A and triple A. He lowered that K rate by about 10%. It really showed off his power. He had 45 doubles, 29 home runs. He had a 270 ISO. The Orioles have another good one on their hands there, and it seems like nowadays their farm system is just absolutely stacked. So yeah. If you're a fan of the American League East teams, and I'm looking at you, Blue Jays, it's going to be a tough road to hoe for those other teams, especially if Baltimore can get their pitching figured out.
For sure. They were a great team last year. But Mayo, he's got massive power potential. Steph definitely been obliterating some balls to the pole side in particular. I'll be following this guy. Somebody on my radar for sure.
Absolutely. And speaking of Blue Jays, he's here with us. Hey, gents, nice. How's everyone doing? Fantastic, brother. I'm always great on podcast day.
Heck yeah.
All right. So let's move along, and Blue, this one's for you. Mm-hmm. We got left-handed pitcher Ricky Tiedemann, Toronto Blue Jays. He is their number one prospect. He still has some work to do lengthening out, and by that I mean over the past couple seasons, he's really only pitched about 70 innings. He has elite strikeout upside, though. He struck out 81 batters in 44 innings. He's got that low arm angle, and I was watching some of his delivery. It reminds me a lot of Chris Sale. He comes at you from that left side, and it's almost like his arm is at 90 degrees, almost like a sidearm pitcher. He induces a lot of ground balls, and he actually satisfies the Kevin Brown quotient. And what I mean by that is somebody who has a combined 75% of strikeout percentage and ground ball percentage. If you're striking out a lot of guys and if you're keeping the ball on the ground, chances are you're going to be a pretty damn good pitcher. He does walk some folks. He averages, what do we got here? Almost 5 walks per 9 innings. And to put that into context, major league average is about 3.3, or it was last year. But again, he's got that just elite strikeout potential, which is what you really want, especially in points leagues, because they count so much. Long-term, I think he's a rock solid SP2.
Yeah. Did you mention his K per nine? I had him last year at 16.8.
Yep.
16.8. That's crazy. 82 Ks and 44 innings pitch. You mentioned his durability. That's a big concern. So is the incompatibility between his fastball and his changeup. Two pitches that require different release points, and he's kind of tipping his hand a bit. So they got to get that fixed. But another midseason hopeful this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially when you're talking about going from fastball to changeup, and he has an opportunity to have an elite changeup. What you're looking for is the delta in the speed between the two. And you want to shoot for about 10 miles an hour difference. Reason being, once you get lower than that, and 9's okay, 8's okay, but if you start getting 6, 5, 4 miles an hour difference, there's not enough difference there to fool the hitters. Even if you are coming with a very similar release point and arm angle, even if you are an elite tunneler. And what I mean by tunneler is, if you have 4 different pitches and they all leave your hand at the exact same spot, it makes it very, very difficult for the hitter to identify what kind of pitch it is. Absolutely. Gauge the speed, gauge the trajectory, decide to swing, and then swing. Because we all know, like, they already only have about 0.2 seconds to make that decision. And if everything looks the same coming out of a pitcher's hand, it makes that decision even that much harder to make.
In a split second.
In a split second. But he's a hell of a prospect. Blue Jays says he loves Ricky T. I don't blame you, brother, as long as he can focus on his durability. And look, it's going to take a minute for that. You don't jump from 70 innings to 150 innings in one season. If the Blue Jays are smart, they're going to work him up slowly. I think this season they'll probably shoot for around 100 innings. And maybe he gets a cup of coffee this year up in the show as well.
Yeah. Let's see. We got Jacob Misorowski, right-handed pitcher for the Brewers. Guy played everywhere last year. Started in low A, then high A, and was promoted to double A. Was 4-2 with a 3.41 ERA, 1.18 whip. He pitched 71 and a third, 110 Ks. Pretty nice. His fastball and slider are very effective. He's also 6'7", 190. You saw from the picture there. Very lanky guy. His fastball and slider are, like I said, top of the scale. He's got this low release point with that long 6'7" reach. He's can hit triple digit velocities and make him appear even faster, you know. So kind of reminiscent of Tyler Glasnow in his swabby days, I guess. So I like him too. He'd probably be more a late season look, as far as what I'm researching, but we'll see.
Yeah. And one thing to keep in mind when you have really lanky guys like that is they tend to struggle with their command. Last season, he allowed as many walks as he did hits. He allowed 42 of 42. Each. Like you were saying, though, dude throws absolute gas. Both his fastball and slider are 70 grade pitches, and the slider really profiles as a dominant out pitch. The Brewers have had some success in recent years with developing pitchers, and I look for that to continue. He's one hell of a prospect. If they can harness all that movement that's going on at one time when he's out there on the mound.
Yep. Agreed.
All right. Man, who do we got next? Yes. Thanks for pointing that out. So we got right-handed pitcher Tank Hentz from the St. Louis Cardinals. I know Ramey is probably thrilled that we're talking about Cardinals prospects. He has two above average pitches. His fastball is a 60 grade. His curve is a 55, projects to a future 60. The changeup needs work, but it projects is slightly above average. He is somebody who you want to pause with. He allowed more hits than he had strikeouts at AA, and that's generally not something that you want to look for. At AA, he averaged 10 hits per nine, 4 walks per nine, did average 9 strikeouts per nine, but he was only going out there for 4 1/3 innings per start. And you're going to need a hell of a lot more innings out of him than that if you want him to be part of a successful fantasy team.
Yeah.
His strand rate was down 20%. His ground ball percentage was down 16%. Home run to fly ball rate was up 10% from 22 to 23. He had a FIP over 4, which was up a point and a half, jumping from single A to double A. Mm-hmm. His ERA more than doubled, up to 5.47. So there's some work to do there, but there's also a hell of a lot to work with this kid.
There is. His delivery is extremely, it's pretty, it's athletic, I should say. Got that upper 90s fastball that you mentioned. It just explodes out of his hand. He's a smaller guy. Doesn't have prototypical, you know, starter size, but he still screams ace upside to me. Pitcher development is non-linear. So I expect him to bounce back this year, have a good year.
Yeah, I do too. And it's so difficult to project pitchers.
It is.
Because you're talking about when you're throwing a ball from that distance at that speed, you're talking about fractions of an inch of difference can make a massive difference. And I know that was a very poorly constructed sentence, but I'm sure all of you out there understand what I'm talking about.
Yep. Heck yeah. All right. Next up is right-handed pitcher Mick Abel out of the Phillies. It's a shame. I think this guy would be good. It's a shame he's with the Phillies organization with so many great pitchers ahead of him at the minor league level, or major league level, I should say. He hasn't made many progress being a strike thrower. He got drafted 15th overall by the Phillies in 2020. He's pretty effective, even with the high walks. He pitched like 113 innings last season, had 65 walks, 132 Ks. Dombrowski, the president there, or whatever his title is for the Phillies, we have, of course, experience with him being with the Tigers for several years. You know, he's already announced that he's not going to be he won't be making a play for the rotation out of spring training. He didn't rule up, you know, potentially coming out at some point this year. But when you got Zach Wheeler and Ranger Suarez and Nola and Christopher Sanchez, it's hard. They're all returning, and it's going to be hard for you to make that lineup with how good the Phillies rotation is.
It is. I mean, what he's got going for him is he's a three-pitch pitcher, yeah. And he's got a slider that profiles like an out pitch. He's had consistently high strikeout rates across three levels. He dipped his toe into AAA, only had one game started there. He allowed a 187 batting average against last season in AA, but he gives up some dingers, and you were talking about it. He walks too many, almost yeah. 6 per 9 innings. That's not something that's going to play at the major league level. You cannot give up free passes like that because you will get burnt.
You will. And I guess the positive about Abel is there's no pressure for him to make the club or help the club this season. He can just work on his stuff, get better, and try and make his debut next season.
Yeah, and in between him and Andrew Painter, the Phillies have a couple legit pitching prospects.
They do.
So their rotation should be pretty damn solid for years to come. They just re-signed Nola. So they're going to have some front of the rotation stability there for a minute. Now we are going to go back to the Brew Crew again. Third baseman Tyler Black.
I like this guy.
Yeah, he has excellent on-base skills. He's got over a 400 career on-base percentage. He's not really going to hit for power. He's a contact hitter with above-average speed. does have a better than average ISO and slugging, but that's driven by doubles and especially being able to leg out triples. He had 12 of those last season. He stole 55 bases last year. He shows an excellent approach at the plate. I think he's going to be one of those dudes who ends up as a multi-positional player. He might get 5 starts a week, and it might be at 3 different positions.
Yeah,
but he's somebody who's he'll contribute on the base pass for you. He's not going to hurt you in average or anything like that. And in points leagues, if you can get a lot of doubles and leg out some triples, that's money in the bank right there.
Yeah, if you weren't already familiar with him previous to last season, his walk and stolen bases. You had to sit up and take notice. Cat's good. I'm going to comp him to a faster Ben Zobrist. Somebody with a solid OBP, 30-40 steal speed, multi-position eligibility, which, as you know, is huge in fantasy baseball. I like this cat for sure. He's on my radar. A lot of people have him sitting out of the top 75. I have him in my top 25 for prospects this season.
Damn. So you're definitely above market on him.
I think, and he's fighting this spring for you know, a roster spot. All right, next we have outfielder Owen Casey. I like the picture there from the Chicago Cubs. Played Double A last season. Had 439 at bats, hit .289, 22 homers, a .918 OPS, which is pretty good. Walked 76 times, did strike out 164 times. I don't love that. They sent him straight to Double A. So when an organization does that, that kind of tells you what they think about the player. They love him. He was awesome in Southern League last season. The raw power is monstrous. He's a relatively good athlete as well. He's one of the premier power hitters in baseball right now for prospects.
Yeah, agree wholeheartedly. He projects out as a 30 home run bat, and he's got the strikeouts to go with it. He struck out over 30% of the time last year. He will draw a walk though. So there's some discipline there. He's kind of a free swinger. He's improving at pulling the ball and elevating it. He has a great exit velocity for his age, and combined with a pretty high line drive rate, that leads to a higher BABIP for him than you would generally see of .407. What does BABIP mean, you ask? That is batting average on balls in play. So that rules out home runs because nobody has an opportunity to field it. And it's anytime you put the ball in play, a ground ball to third counts just the same as a fly out to right field and a double up the gap.
We did harp on his strikeouts there a little bit. He did improve as the season went on. He was 33.9 K rate in the first half, 27.7. He lowered it to in the second half. In the last 21 games, he brought it all the way down to 21.7. So he's figuring some things out. We'll hope it carries over to this season. I like this cat a lot too.
Absolutely. So who we got next on the list? We are going back to the Pirates, and we've got another pitching prospect there. I know we talked about one yesterday in Paul Skeens. This is Jared Jones. He is a power pitcher who sits in the high 90s. His slide piece and curve are improving, but they do look too similar coming out of his hand. He needs to work on that, and he also needs to work on throwing his changeup slower. If you're throwing a fastball at 96 and your changeup comes in at 92, just like we were talking about earlier, it's not enough delta there. Yeah. He had an ERA of 4.72 last year, but a 3.98 whip. So he was kind of hurt by some subpar defense at time. That led to more hits overall and a higher whip of 1.32.
Yeah.
So as he gets in front of a little bit better defense and he works on his breaking pitches to help differentiate them and slows down his changeup, I think you're going to see his FIP improve and both his ERA as well.
Yeah, his main change was command from 22 to 23. He used his plus fastball to get ahead, and that slider is a wipeout pitch. He finished plenty of people that way, but you mentioned his 4.72 ERA, struggled in AAA last season, or he might have actually debuted last season, but I didn't want to take a chance at that. So he's definitely somebody I could see being on the roster at some point this season. That takes us across the country to Colorado. The Rockies outfielder Zach Veen played in double-A ball last year, hit 209 with 172 at-bats, just two home runs, 22 stolen bases, though, a 612 OPS, 23 walks, and 43 Ks. He's been a sub-200 hitter since he got to double-A late in 2022. He had a hand injury as well that has slowed him down a while, but taking that into account, it seems kind of too early to write him off. He was verging top 10 status prior to the injury. A lot of people comparing him to Kyle Tucker. He was the ninth pick in the 2020 draft. We'll see. He's a hopeful for midseason, but we'll see. He's high contact guy, can hit it to all fields. He's got some speed with just a little bit of pop.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's almost like you took my notes verbatim. Has a little pop, excellent speed. He's got seasons of 50, 36, and 22 stolen bases. Yeah. He's got a good frame to fill out into. And he's going into a fantastic home ballpark there in Colorado.
Oh, yeah.
And since we're talking about minor leaguers, this is something that's important to remember. There is the Pacific Coast League, all right? And that is just like it sounds. It's ballparks out west. The vast majority of them are at elevation. And what does that mean? You're going to have inflated hitting stats,
yep,
and you're going to have inflated pitching stats, but in a negative way. So when you look at somebody who's played minor league ball in Salt Lake City or Albuquerque or something like that, you want to build in that context.
Yep.
He's somebody who he lost most of last year to wrist surgery. He's somebody who's going to need to get off to a hot start in camp and carry it through for a couple months in the minors to show that he's ready to come up. But he is the Rockies' top overall prospect, and I know they're going to be keeping a close eye on him.
Heck yeah.
Now, you know we weren't going to talk about prospects and not bring up Tigers.
Yeah, we're headed to the D, baby.
That's it. And I know you love the D. So we got right-handed pitcher Jackson Jobe. He is somebody who generates elite spin. What do I mean by that? Rotations of the ball. Very, very simple. He's got a slider that's been measured up over 3,000 RPM.
It's sick.
Which is just ridiculous. he's still pretty raw, but he has a solid four-pitch mix with a plus-plus slider. Just that one I was talking about just a minute ago. He's battled injuries last season, but he pitched pretty damn well in the Arizona Fall League. Across 15 innings, he allowed 14 hits, 5 walks, struck out 19, and posted a 2.87 ERA. He is Detroit's top pitching prospect. Is he going to be up this year? Maybe he comes up for a cup of coffee in September. Tigers broadcast team there, Dan Dickerson and formerly Jim Price, say, you know, bring him up, let him see the tall buildings, let him get a taste, send him back down, and then get him ready for the 2025 season, where if he continues to develop the way that he has, and if they can put a little bit of polish on him, maybe he breaks camp with the big club.
Yep. Yeah, it's third pick in the 2021 draft. We were stoked that they grabbed him. The spin rate, dude. That's just a jaw-dropping characteristic. That's sick. I think he could be the Tigers' ace of the future. That's only if he can stay durable. He only pitched 64 innings. He had some back issues last season that lingered for a couple months. So yeah, late season look is what I project as well. Come up and enjoy your cup of coffee.
Absolutely.
All righty, that wraps up them 10 players for the minors prospects. Jeez, can't talk today, or any day for that matter. Let's talk some football. You want to talk some football, Matt? Some American football?
Hell yeah, I want to talk some football.
All right.
You know what? Why don't we just start off? We'll run through the games in order. So first off, we've got the Texans at the Ravens. Ravens are laying 9.5 with a total of 43.5, according to DraftKings. You know, in a situation like that, I'm really torn between, do I want to lay points or do I want to get points? I think Houston has enough to hang around. I don't see them getting blown out. I think if I was going to bet this game, I would take Houston and the points, but maybe I bump that up to 10.5 as opposed to 9.5. Yeah, the odds are going to be reduced a little bit, but I'm a little more comfortable with that number. The total, I don't know. I think that might be just about right at 43.5. These are a couple of defenses who generally played pretty well over the last half of the season. Baltimore's had an excellent defense, you know, all season long, but I believe I saw earlier Marlon Humphrey is going to be out for this game. They're still going to have Kyle Hamilton, but he's banged up. The question is, you know, are the Texans going to have the horses to take advantage of that? I don't see this being a Devin Singletary game. If the Texans are going to win, it's going to be because of Stroud and Nico Collins.
Definitely. And the defense making, you know, the right play, some play. They have to create a turnover there. Listen, it's the Ravens. It all starts with Lamar Jackson, right? This is first full season since 2020. They're 28-12 with Lamar when he starts, 3-7 without him. They led the league in point differential. They outscored opponents by a league high 142 points in the first half this year. If they get out big, I don't even see CJ Stroud. I don't think is going to be able to come back. You know, the Texans, they've beaten some good teams. They've beaten three playoff teams this year, but all at home. The Browns, the Bucks, the Steelers, they beat them all, but all at home. The Ravens at home is going to be tough. The only it team is. That gave the Ravens any fits this season was the 49ers, honestly.
And the Rams did a pretty good
job. Oh, yeah, they had the overtime game with the Rams, I suppose, as well. And the Colts did beat them there at home. I don't even count that game. But, you know, I think they take it. Home teams have posted, since the expansion of 32 teams in 2022, home teams have a strong 57-27 record over that span. Last year, the home teams went 3-1 in the divisional round. We'll see.
We will see. I mean, and you're right. If Baltimore gets out to a lead, especially there in the first half, coming out of halftime, they're going to take the air out of the ball. And they're going to sit on that lead. They're going to keep the clock running, and they're going to make Houston play catch up. Now, is Houston equipped to play catch up? Kind of. When they had Tank Dell and Noah Brown, they were better equipped to do it now than, you know, just kind of having, you know, John fucking Mechie and, you know, whatever other scrubs that they run out there, Robert, you know, dudes that I've never even heard of who are going to be selling insurance in 6 months.
Right.
It's a tall order.
The UFL's coming. They'll play in that.
Awesome. League. Well, there you go. There's a little bit of job security for them.
If that's what it's called now, I can't exactly remember if that.
Yeah. United Football League, because the XFL and whatever other shit that nobody watched merged. So,
yeah. Packers, another young team like the Texans, going down the road, against, their number one seed, the 49ers. They're favored by 9.5 with a total of 50.5. That's probably about right with the way these teams can fucking score. Jordan Love throws, you know, multiple touchdown passes, seems every damn game. I still think the 49ers got this. I'll take the points with the Packers. I'll take the +9.5 for the Packers. I think they can keep it close. We'll just have to see. You know, the Packers had a huge game last week. Nobody really gave them a chance to go down to Dallas and upset the Cowboys. So another tough game for them. We'll see if they can do it.
Yeah, they're a team they're definitely playing with house money at this point.
Oh, yeah.
As crazy as it sounds, and as much as I hate to say this, because FTP, I see a path to victory for them. Now, is it the most likely outcome? Absolutely not. But at the same time, with that group of receivers that they have, and with the way Jordan Love is playing, if they get into a shootout, I think that is bad news for San Francisco. All Brock Purdy's turnovers came in games where he attempted more than 30 passes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you can get in a position where he's dropping back 30, 35, 40 times, I think they can take advantage of that because, you know, the Packers defense has not played that well as of late, but they played well enough and they've made the plays that matter to get them the wins that they've needed to. I mean, number one, to get into the playoffs, number two, to go down to Dallas and win convincingly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dallas put up a lot of yards and everything. That shit was garbage time, period.
Oh, yeah.
That's what it was. Green Bay winning is not the most likely outcome. I think they've kind of reached their peak for this year, but, you know, I wouldn't be floored if they won. I definitely think they're going to cover.
Yeah. Green Bay was up 27-0 at the half and 48-16 with 10 to go. The Cowboys got the 32 points. Yeah, you're exactly right. Garbage time. Green Bay's offense has just looked so much better in the last month. They've scored 30 points three out of the last 4 weeks. Over the first 14 games of the season, once. So I think you really got to give a lot of credit to Aaron Jones as too. He's making that offense go. Green Bay needs to get out to a big lead. You know, over their past 9 games, they've scored 2.78 points per drive in the opening half of games. The first 9 games of the season, they were shitty. They were like 1.02 points per game in the first drive. So they have definitely figured some things out. Matt LaFleur and Jordan Love are coexisting, and right now it's looking like a beautiful thing. So we'll see what happens. This is a nice deal because LaFleur and Shanahan worked together at, I know, Washington, Houston, Atlanta. So we'll see. This is the 6th time they've faced each other. Shanahan's won 3 of those games.
Nice. Yeah, and this season has been interesting because in years past you had LaFleur there and you had Rodgers there and he was just kind of doing his thing. We'll say sometimes within and sometimes outside the structure of LaFleur's offense. And now you've got Jordan Love, who is running LaFleur's offense the way he wants it run. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing the results. You know, earlier this year, it was a little bit choppy. But as the season has gone on, you've seen Jordan Love get more comfortable. As Aaron Jones has come back, you're exactly right. Over the past 3 weeks, I mean, Aaron Jones has been vintage. Huge. Aaron Jones. He's looked fantastic. And I think right now, probably the best thing for that offense is for A.J. Dillon to not play. Because if A.J. Yeah. Dillon plays, then they're going to be tempted to put him in, and you're just not seeing the results from him that you're seeing from Aaron Jones. Ride Aaron Jones. Beat his ass like a government mule and just... I mean, run him into the ground.
Yep. I wholeheartedly agree there. Go with the hot hand. Just go with them. But all right, man. Lions. Second home playoff game.
Never get here.
Oh my God. It's amazing. Bucks are coming to town. Week 6, we went down to Tampa Bay, beat the Bucks. We had some people out though. Right guard Jonah Jackson was out. Gibbs was out. Brian Branch was out. Monty got hurt in the second quarter with that rib injury, so he went out. So it was the Craig Reynolds show. And if you recall, Craig Reynolds threw the fucking greatest block I've ever fucking seen to spring ARSB for that touchdown, where Craig Reynolds had no fucking business being there to be in position that buck. You saw him speed up and try and get up there ahead of ARSB to block for him. And they were just trying to pick up the first down. Fuck it. ARSB was able to get to the end zone. I loved it. So, another rematch. I think 3 out of the 4 games this weekend are rematches from the regular season.
No kidding. Yeah. I see the hell's that dickhead's name? Chris Godwin popped up on the injury report. Look, does Tampa Bay have the players to win on the outside and attack Detroit's defense where it's most vulnerable? Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And Baker Mayfield, to his credit, he's played pretty damn well this season, all things considered. I mean, he comes in having to take over for Tom Brady, which is no easy task.
Our Lord and Savior.
Right. Regardless of venue. And he's held his own. Rashad White has really impressed after he got off to a rocky start. I just don't think they have. It's not going to happen. Like, the Buccaneers are not going to win. Maybe they covered. That's fine. I don't give two shits if they do. Detroit's getting the dub in this game. We're going to be back in the NFC Championship for the first time since the 1991 season. Hopefully we get a slightly different result than that year, because your boy here has a little wager in on Detroit to win the Super Bowl. And I would certainly love to cash that ticket and take a little bit of a windfall. You know, when they played earlier this season, Kyle, you were exactly right. Detroit was banged up. Monty went out in the second quarter. They're going to get a full, complete dose of Monty. They're going to get a full dose of Jahmyr Gibbs. Laporta has been a full participant at practice somehow. Praise be to Brady for allowing that to happen. And Jared Goff is playing with some confidence and a little bit of swagger. And look, he's no stranger to playing in the playoffs. He's taken a team to a Super Bowl before. He has that playoff experience. I like Detroit. I think the game goes under 49.5. I think it's going to come in somewhere around 45, maybe. I could see it being a, you know, a 24-17 kind of game, 24-20, something like that. Don't judge my math skills. It, you know, I work at a bank, but I work in operations. So I'm not messing too much with other people's money there.
That was Tampa Bay failed to score a touchdown in that game. That was one of only two games where they didn't score a touchdown this season. They were negative 11.7 expected points added. That was their worst game of the season. I think the Lions defense is playing a little better, at least a little more cohesively, I'll say.
They are, and you've had some people return from injury, some key pieces, and it takes a little bit of time to get that chemistry back. Melifonwu's out there making plays, and that's fantastic. I love it. Go make the plays. But at the same time, we need to make the routine plays as well.
Yeah.
And just play solid fundamental football, get the win, and head on to the NFC Championship game. And with, you know, a little bit of luck, it'll be in Detroit. Yeah. Brandon will go to that game too.
Yeah, he certainly would. All right. We're closing it out with Chiefs at Bills. Mahomes, first time that he is going to start a road playoff game in his career. I think this has been one of the best modern rivalries, Chiefs-Bills, lately. Just, Jesus, it's a great time. This will be the seventh game where Mahomes and Josh Allen have faced off. 3-3 straight up record. So, and against the spread. So, we shall see. Will Josh Allen be turnover free? Because that is going to be the key to them winning this football game.
It is, and you know, Mahomes has turned the ball over quite a bit this year as well.
Sure.
These are two teams who have kind of redefined themselves. You know, they're now more run heavy teams. They're focusing on the run game and playing some defense. Obviously you had the change in OC up there in Buffalo, switching over to Joe Brady, who he was the OC at LSU there in 2020 when they scored 850 million points and just slapped the shit out of everybody. But it also helps when you have, you know, all pro level players at multiple positions on their offense. This game, to me, it, looking at it, the Bills are laying 2.5. I don't necessarily know that's the right number because I'm still not sure who I think is going to win. But I do see it being played within 3 points. I think these are two pretty evenly matched teams. It's going to come down to, you know, how does the Chiefs offense fare on the road in the playoffs? And are they going to get anybody to step up besides Rashee Rice? Travis Kelce has not really been a factor over the last several weeks. And on the Bills side, you know, is Gabe Davis going to be back? I've not seen much on him this week, but I know he missed last week. Whatever the hell is going on with Stephon Diggs, are they going to be able to fix that? And are they going to be able to continue to lean on James Cook? You know, Dalton Kincaid has stepped up for them, which has been fantastic. I saw they cut playoff Lenny. They're going to stick with
Latavius Murray.
Yeah, Lat Murray and that other dickhead they run out there, like Ty Johnson or something like that, some kind of other afterthought. Total is 45 and a half. I think that's probably about the right number there, just based on the way these offenses have been playing.
Yeah.
So now that we've run through all four of these games, if you had to pick a team to score the upset, who would you pick?
Packers.
No kidding.
Yeah, it kills me to say that. But we'll see. You know, the rest that the 49ers are getting is it's going to be huge. Same with the Ravens. I'll pick the Packers.
Okay. I can dig it. I can dig it. I would also agree with you. Now, part of that is me wearing my Homer hat here because I want Detroit to have one more home playoff game.
Yeah.
And I've been talking to, you know, there's a few idiots at work who are Packers fans. And, you know, part of the time I pity them. And the other part of the time it's just like, you know, what the hell is wrong with you? But regardless, I told them all, I see you in the NFC Championship game.
Right. There you go. All you got to do is win, baby. L,
Davis.
Yep. Thanks.
You're welcome.
I could not freaking remember. All righty. Guess what time it is? Do you know what time it is?
It is time for
time for school
with us and say an all NFC North championship game. Hell yes. I
love it. It'd be a rubber match too. So
that's it. I mean, you can hop on the Lions bandwagon. We got room. We got beer. We got Coney's. Like it's a good old time.
Yeah. We got Faygo. We got pasties. We got, I don't know what else we fucking got. But
that's enough.
All right. Let's go to school. Fantasy baseball 101.
You didn't put the chick up there.
Oh, where is she? There she is. So, yeah, we're monitoring the minor leagues. Basically, what we're talking about is just kind of giving you some websites that, you know, we use that we find helpful as well. I know Fangraphs is a favorite of mine and Matt's. We'll use that a lot, especially there's actual tab for prospects there that you can actually create a custom list of players there called the board. It's not very user friendly, so I don't recommend that if you can figure it out, but I had some troubles with it. But Fangraphs as a whole has great information. Sometimes it's overwhelming. Another one too that people don't think about is just MLBTradeRumors.com. Something to check out. A lot, always a good information on there. Many trades in the league include minor leaguers. I check this page frequently this season or all year for that matter.
Yeah. There's also Baseball America and I'll continue to parrot Fangraphs. One of the reasons that I like them is there are a couple sites who continually update their top prospect list throughout the season, as opposed to just putting out something before the season and then at the break. Baseball Reference, for those of you who are football fans, I'm sure you've heard of a Pro Football Reference. Well, there's a baseball version out there, provides you plenty of information. It's not as robust on the minor leaguers as it is for the major leaguers. And a big part of that is you don't really have StatCast data for a lot of these minor league ballparks. I think there's some at AAA, but it's kind of sparse. And so we've talked about where to go to get information, but why is it important? You know, why is it critical that you monitor the minor leagues as you go through your fantasy baseball season? The first reason is for future talent acquisition. The season is long. It's 6 months long. The regular season for fantasy baseball is 5 months long. And then you get into the playoffs there in September. It's a lot of teams. It's a huge playoff pool or player pool. It just look over that course of time, players get hurt. And you want to be ahead of the curve, that can give you a really big advantage. Another reason is injury replacements. Just talked about that. Or performance replacements. And being aware of prospects and understand nobody expects you guys to keep your own personal top 400 prospect list. I mean, that's just ridiculous. Kyle and I don't even do that. I'll have 10, maybe a dozen that I want to keep an eye on, but that really comes in handy when you take a look at who's on waivers and it's a bunch of Jags, a bunch of dudes who are just guys. They're also important for trade value. People tend to overvalue prospects, especially those who get off to a hot start. For whatever reason, everybody wants the shiny new toy, right? They want to be the smartest dude in the room. They want to unearth the next Mike Trout or the next Mookie Betts or Ronald Acuna or whatever it may be. True of the matter is, that dude hanging out down there at Double A for the Pirates, he's not the next Mike Trout. He's not the next Mookie Betts. He's not the next Ronald Acuna. He might be some asshole who's going to get a few plate appearances because somebody got hurt. But that's it.
Yeah.
And it's also nice if you're looking to trade, you can take advantage of that. And include, if you've got a prospect stashed, hey, you know, I'll give you this pitcher and I'll throw in this prospect. And then people, they get all the Twitter. Oh my God, I can get the prospect too. He's going to be the next greatest, next best thing. Bullshit. No, it ain't. But you can fleece that other owner.
Sure. Yeah. Very rarely does that happen, you know, where they just turn out to be freaking, you know, Michael Jordan of the baseball world.
It helps with strategic planning. You know, if you're in a league that has some minor league roster spots and you see somebody's getting called up, and but you can still keep them on that minor league slot for a while, there's going to be times when that makes sense. Understanding who to stash, when to trade some of these players. Again, you don't need to monitor the entire minor leagues, but, you know, just go to your favorite team's website and look at their prospects. You know, pick out two or three guys, especially if there's somebody who's ranked in the top 100, 150, something like that.
Yep.
And then the last part, at least to me, and the most important one, is it gives you such a competitive advantage. You're going to have a leg up on those other team managers who don't pay attention to the minor leagues. It'll help you understand who to choose. If you need an injury or a performance replacement, do I take a prospect or do I take a more established player who may have, you know, a lower floor, but or a higher floor, but a lower ceiling? And when you are faced with decisions like that, where all other factors being equal, go with a younger player.
Yeah, agreed. What else did we have? Oh, did you want to show that one website? I don't know how to share the screen.
The one that looks like it was created in, you know, like 1998.
You think so?
The Cube? Yeah.
It's no, old school. Not the Cube. The first one.
Oh, the player tracker.
Yes.
Gotcha. All right.
Share your screen for that, because then you can easily share your stuff or save your stuff right here to the players you want to track, the 12 players, 20 players, whoever you want. It's something I'm going to use because I thought it was pretty neat.
All right, here we go. And this is right on MLB.com, just the main page for Major League Baseball. And we can drop this link, I don't know, on the socials or somewhere.
Yeah, I could do that.
You go over here to Player Tracker. You type in a last name. Let's go with who's somebody we talked about earlier.
Let's Joe.
Fuck it. Colt Keith.
There you go.
You pick him. And here he is. Here's all his stats across L, I believe, his levels, his at-bats, plate appearances. All that information is right there.
Yep, and then you can hit the share list there over to the right, the blue, and then it creates a link for you. You can just save and bookmark, and that'll save that list. And then you can add, delete, subtract, whatever with your list. It's definitely something I'm going to take advantage of and keep. So came across it today, thought I'd share with you fellas. All right, we got a few minutes here. Free time. Who wants to talk?
Oh shit, freestyle.
Yeah, fuck it, we're doing it. Get rid of this damn banner. Blue Jays, if you're still there, how you feeling against the Chiefs? The Chefs, I should say. Who the hell are the Chefs?
Yeah. Dubo, who you got winning the Super Bowl now that we're down to eight teams? I'm curious what everybody's opinion is. I have my very heavily biased opinion.
Yep, you sure do.
But even, look, understand, even if the Lions don't win the Super Bowl, this has been a hell of a year for Michigan football, for Lions football. Like, this has just been fantastic. Like, how could you ask for more? There's Sway. Sway. Well, the sorry, loins. He was looking at the
where did the loins the play? Dubo's got my picks, Lions versus Ravens. Very well could happen.
Yeah. Very well could absolutely happen. And hopefully it would turn out a little bit better than their first matchup. That was just some bull-ish. We'll just throw that to the side.
We got our dick knocked in the dirt that game.
It did,
I was hyped for that game, and we just came out looking like shit. They had the much better game plan and stuck it. Really put it to us. Lions take it in a thriller. The year of the cat.
El Gato Grande. I'll take it. And we appreciate your support, Dubo. Like I said, plenty of room on the bandwagon. And we don't have those bullshit Detroit-style conies. We got the good Flint-style conies. Detroit-style coney, that shit's a chili dog. Looks like soup dumped on a hot dog.
It's the year of the dragon in the Chinese astrology stuff.
Yeah, but that doesn't benefit us.
No, it doesn't.
No, if it was the year
dragons aren't, because dragons aren't real.
And that's why I've never watched Game of Thrones. There's too much disbelief to suspend.
I watched the first three seasons and then I couldn't do anymore. So, yeah. Oh, well. Fargo was great, though. I don't know if you guys watch a lot of series, but the fifth season of Fargo is pretty good. Let's see. You got a good squad. Expect some cheap shots from the D. Oh, don't get on that thing. The funny thing about that was Kirby Joseph taking out Higbee, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Caused him an ACL injury. There was a hit on Laporta, same kind of deal, low to the legs. That guy already has a freaking leg injury. That was pretty much a carbon copy of the hit of Kirby Joseph, and nobody's bitching about that. So it's the NFL. These hits happen. It's a perfectly legal hit. Kirby Joseph hasn't been fined one time this season. So.
And you got to remember, too, like, Kirby Joseph has given up like 50 pounds to these tight ends. You're not going to hit them dudes high. But even if he is a dirty player, you know what? Fuck it. We're in the playoffs and you ain't. Yep.
says, I knew that strike a nerve. Just fucking with you. Oh, I knew it. I know. It's all good.
I appreciate it.
Coming with receipts. Boy, ain't even been fined all season. If he's dirty, he'd have been fined and suspended. That's it. But
I mean, that's how they teach you to tackle. Go for the thighs.
It was a legal hit, and until that hit's not legal, then fuck it. Keep doing it.
Absolutely.
Anything you got to do to keep winning, I'm okay with.
That's it. I am perfectly fine with the Lions lying, cheating, stealing. I don't give two shits. Just get the ring. Yeah. I don't care how you get there.
Well, we got to. We're owed a few over the ways that we've been screwing games over the years. Too many to mention, but and it's happened to all football teams. The Bills, the Vikings, everybody's gotten screwed.
So. Just seems like it happens to Detroit more often, but, you know, that could be like confirmation bias as well.
You had a lot of Rams fans complaining about some pass interference calls there. And them saying that it was one of the worst pass interference calls in NFL history. And then, of course, somebody smartly replied, you know, it's like showed a picture of the Rams Saints game.
Oh,
and that champion, the NFC championship, which was just so fucking blatantly pass interference draped all over him. And, you know, it happens, folks. It does. And referees are human and they make mistakes, unfortunately, and it fucking sucks.
Yes. And they also have biases, specifically against the Lions.
Yes. Is Jim Harbaugh staying at Michigan? It's the off season where he always sniffs the NFL. Last season he had an interview with your Vikings duo. Or 2 years ago, was it? Shit, I can't remember. 2 years ago. Was it two
seasons? I think this is O'Connell's first year. So I think it would have been last off season.
No, they had O'Connell last year because Hockenson went there last year and he was the coach.
That's right. That's right.
So it was two seasons ago that he interviewed with the Vikings and didn't go. But
there's a lot of smoke around him going to LA right now.
There is, and I don't understand this protection thing for termination protection clause from, you know, NCAA findings, and I don't understand it. Just give it to him. Give him his $11 million a year. Give him that. Let's keep him. I'd like for him to stay. I understand if he goes. I get it. So he's won a natty. He wants to be one of the few coaches that I know have won a Super Bowl and a natty, and he went to the Super Bowl and unfortunately lost to his fucking brother against the Ravens, but we'll see. Dubell says, what's he got left to do there? He'll grab the bag and go. And part of me thinks that too, you know. I mean, it was shit 2020 and they wanted his head. Can you imagine if they would have terminated him and we wouldn't have got no fucking Natty this 10 days ago? Wouldn't have fucking happened.
Nope. Sure wouldn't have. You know, and they've got a decent staff there with Sharon Moore and Minter. I'd have to imagine there are a lot of people who would line up to interview for the job there at Michigan coming off of Natty. I don't know. We'll see. I hope he sticks around. Just give the man whatever he wants. If he wants $11, $12 million a year on a 10-year contract, give it to him. Let's make it a minimum 8, Pete.
Yeah, give it to him. So, but, you know, obviously the report that came out a couple weeks ago about, you know, they'll give him a contract, but don't flirt with the NFL this season. He obviously gave him the finger about that. And it's not really just the AD Ward Manuel. I think they actually do like each other, but you have regents and stuff dealing with this contract stuff as well. A lot of people that are involved on it. And there's a lot of those regent board members there on the University of Michigan that wanted him gone when this cheating scandal came out a few months ago. A lot of hardliners on there. So we'll see. I mean, hey, if you're not wanted, go.
I don't know that I would call it cheating. I would just call it like enhanced study.
Okay. I like that. Enhanced study. Yeah. Traveling guy who travels to all the games and videotapes the shit with a phone and sends his friends to do the same and whatever. I mean, fuck it. I mean, the cheating scandal came out. Of course, all the teams that we played from then on out were doing their best to keep everything buttoned up with their signals and this and that. And it didn't fucking matter because we beat them all anyway.
Yes.
Big programs too. Penn State, Ohio State, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
Michigan's the national champions, and I'm going to keep riding this until they're not.
That's it. To be the man, you got to beat the man. So. All right. Think it's about time to wrap her up. Those of you that stopped by to hang out, we appreciate it. Everyone who subscribes, we really, really enjoy your support, and we're humbled that you would choose to spend your time with us, because at the end of the day, the most valuable thing that you have is your time.
Yep. I agree. I don't have anything. I'm excited to watch some playoff football this weekend. I'm thinking about college basketball too. I don't know if Blue Jays and Dubo are college basketball fans or not, or Sway for that matter.
No, but Sway's a boxing fan. Boxing, just don't take betting advice from him, because boxing, you know, he'll ask him too. Hey, who's going to win a fight? And then he'll tell you, and then you come back afterwards and say, oh, well, you know, that's who I wanted to win, but I knew the other guy was going to win. It's like, well, I wish you'd have told me that $50 ago, but, you know, whatever. Got nothing for love. Nothing but love for you, brother.
Dubo says he does a bracket. Oh, everybody. I bet heavily on the definitely the first weekend of the NCAA tournament. I take that week long weekend off. Matt and I usually get together for that weekend and chill around with three or four TVs in front of us and betting and eating good for sure.
But, hell yeah.
All right, man. We'll see you guys again Tuesday. That's all I got. Peace.
And that's all you're gonna get. See you, folks.